like Showtime? What the hell are you talking about, bro? I can tell you delirious.
Nah, Showtime is lit, bro. It's like Black Joy in its like purest form.
It ain't always Black Joy, though. Sometimes it's they I mean, get it a calls aggressive.
The Showtime?
You never seen that when they're like, oh, so we just, they'd be like, we just some black people. Like, we could be robbing y'all. We could be killing y'all.
Yeah. But those are the, those are like the D-Train Showtime people. You know what I'm saying? A-Train and the J-Train Showtime people don't really be doing shit like that.
Yeah. Do they got any,
not any new,
you haven't seen before?
Nah, I pretty much seen, I recognize them at this point.
Just a bunch of,
but every time I'm like, let me take off my headphones.
A bunch of this.
Nah, they don't be tutting. They more so like be doing handstands and jumping and sliding on the poles and shit, oh, and doing the flag. That shit's impressive, bro. Them niggas are strong.
I don't know what you
do. You hate it?
Yes.
It's impressive.
Bro,
it's talent. For free.
I'm just trying to eat my Doritos and look at my text messages. I don't want a nigga sliding across on a damn pole.
But that's your problem. You're eating Doritos on the train. You nasty.
Is this a fucking strip club? Get off the pole, you dirty bitch. I don't like any of that. That's crazy. That's crazy. Nah, how you feeling?
I'm fucking tired.
I was about to say, you look delirious, my boy.
I'm really tired. Been up since 3 a.m. running around city to city.
Had a quick little city to city. Yeah,
you
had
type
quick
shit. You know,
I just be, you know how I do.
I had to take a train down to DC and come right back.
You took the train.
I took an Amtrak. They're getting cheaper. I think they're realizing nobody can fucking afford $180 tickets. But I came back to make sure we could, you know, stay consistent with this.
Hey, my boy. Yeah, last time I took the damn mega bus when I went back to DC, on my way back, I witnessed a fight broke out on the bus.
On the bus?
On the bus.
On the mega bus?
On the mega bus.
The double decker? Upstairs or downstairs?
Upstairs.
Oh my God.
Right?
It's not even, it's like, I cannot stand up there.
That's what I'm saying. There's literally not enough space.
So they were like ducking in front of you?
So like, all right, so pretty much what happened, it didn't boil over. It did get physical. So pretty much there was a lady, she was asleep, and then about halfway through the trip, before we got to even Baltimore, so we were probably like almost an hour in, She goes to put her seat back, and there is an Asian gentleman behind her with his knees up on the seat, pretty much preventing her from putting her seat back. Mm-hmm. And so when she goes to put her seat back, she's like restricted, and she gets up and she's like, hey, can you let me put my seat back? And this is, I don't know if this is what happened. I had my headphones in, but this is kind of what was conveyed to me after the fact. Mm-hmm. But she's like, yeah, can you let me put my seat back? And apparently he said, no, why don't you just move to the seat next to you? They both had free seats next to them. Keep this in mind for the overall conflict.
Okay. I know how it is. Yeah.
And she's like, he's like, no, just move to the next seat. And she's like, no, I want to sit by the window, and I just want to put my seat down. Why can't you just put your feet down? He's like, because I don't want to. Apparently, that's what he said. I don't want to put my feet down, and you can just move to the seat next to you and put the seat back.
He could have also did the same thing.
He could have also did the same thing, but she could have, I don't know, whatever, right? So she gets up, and she starts yelling in his face, like, yo, put your feet down. I want to put my seat back. What the hell is wrong with you? He's just looking at her at this point because now people are
with his feet up.
With his feet up, looking stupid. He looks stupid in the first place. That there's no way that's comfortable. Exactly. Exactly. This is exactly how he looks.
Not putting my feet up.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
And so
he's an asshole.
And yes,
I want to pick my side now.
But then, right. She notices that he's playing a Nintendo DS, and she snatches it out of his hand and immediately throws it across the bus, right? And it hits the window, and like, you know.
It fell apart?
Did
you see that?
That's where I jumped in. Yeah, pretty much. I had my headphone in. I heard kind of tensions being heightened in the background. And as I was pulling out my headphone, I saw the DS just fly across the bus. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's where we are.
The Pokemon Go just like popped out.
Literally. And he's like, you broke my game. You broke my game.
Oh,
like,
no. That's like the worst thing. That's like worse than like.
He was definitely exaggerating, but I could see where he came from because at that moment he didn't really necessarily know if it was broken or not.
Oh my God. DS.
Oh my God. And you could tell like it was all he had, you know, that DS. So he was just really and just the conflict just boiled over to the point where they're screaming at each other. And luckily we had a stop in Baltimore and somebody came on the bus and kind of stopped that interaction from escalating to any other point. Oh, but I mean, pretty much she took his DS. She picked it up. She was like, it's not broken, and held it for the rest of the ride until we got into Baltimore.
Oh,
so,
my
like,
God. So he just let her take it?
Literally just let her take it. She kind of...
That's what he get.
Yeah, low key.
But that's pretty aggressive on her. That could have ended really...
And I'm
really
like,
bad.
And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, if y'all make this bus pull over, I'm beating both of y'all to like, I... might be conflicted as to what you're listening to, what you're looking at the moment. Sorry about that. You know us. We get straight to it. But if there is any confusion, I'm going to go ahead and clear that up because you know I do it week to week. You should know by now. But if you don't, what is this? Where is this? Evil Hour podcast program, audio show, whatever you want to call it, where every episode is the first episode. We're co-host Coleman Howie. I'm your host, Knight. Welcome back.
Another one.
You already know. You already know the Overthinker's Paradise, the brash and comedic exploration of the human psyche. Thank you for allowing us back in your ears and your eyes or wherever you're, you know, taking in this content from. Pause. Thank you. Thank you again. Pause. Yes. So, getting back to that. Yes. let's talk about conflict.
Let's
because
jump right into
there's a couple
it.
There's a, like a lot of things I want to discuss. Mm-hmm. And I also think that you couldn't be talking to two better people about this situation, specifically about conflict, because between the two of us, I think you have the two opposite ends of the spectrum. You have you, who I wouldn't say that you seek conflict, but what I would say is that I have seen you almost beat up an old man before. That
I didn't almost beat him up.
You did, and I knew you were going to say that. And
I didn't almost
stop
beat
lying.
Him up. I didn't
stop.
Almost beat
you
him
did
up.
You did almost beat him
he
up.
He was just being rude, and I had to like be like, yo.
And you were like, yo, what's up? And he's like looking at you like, you what's up? Like, what you about to say? Like, I'm like, oh my God.
No, he was just like, he like bumped into me on a wide ass train platform. Like, why? There was so many other places you could walk around.
Look,
and
y'all,
it just felt like, you know.
Getting riled up. Look at him. You ready?
I don't seek conflict. I'm just not afraid of conflict.
That's okay. That's
yeah,
what I was saying.
I mean, like, I don't mind conflict. It's,
yeah.
It's kind of, I won't say exciting, but I would rather not back down.
Okay. And then you have me. I'm on the other opposite end of the spectrum. Somebody who's literally pretended to be blind to get out of a fight before. Hello. And now a word from our sponsors. This episode of the Evil Ego Hour podcast is sponsored by Ron John Johnson's Mental Self-Defense. My name's Ron John Johnson, and I have a very important message for you. I don't know if you know this or not, but you're currently under attack. We're constantly being assaulted every day by emotions, information, and people that prey on our mind and take full advantage of our vulnerabilities. Ha! Not anymore. Ron John Johnson's Mental Self-Defense will teach you the proper techniques to defend your mind against invasion. Ha! My program breaks mental self-defense down to three simple maneuvers. Block, block, and block. It's as easy as that. Depression. Block. Love. Block. Shield yourself from ever getting hurt by putting up numerous psychological barriers between you, the world, and everyone you know. Ha! I will train you on how to properly suppress those emotions until you're completely numb. I'll make it my life's mission to assure you that you will never be taken advantage of again. Now, if you're listening to this and you find yourself in Maryland, I want you to take a trip down to 111 Buckethead Road, make a left at the Chipotle. Tell them Ron John sent you and you'll get the first two classes for free. Remember, it's time to step up for yourself because only you can. Ha!
I tried to walk away from a conflict, and that was the one time I got hit in the fucking face.
Oh my gosh, that situation.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't.
So you know, it's just like I probably should have done what I naturally do.
Yeah.
Cause I tried to be like you.
Yeah.
A bit. And then I got, and I really turned into.
All right, so let's as always, we got to lay the framework for the conversation.
Yeah.
We need formal definitions. Can you give me the formal definition?
Yes, of sir. Yes, sir. Conflict, yes, sir. Please. We have three that we put into our notes. So the first one, we have conflict, a serious disagreement or argument, typically a protracted one. We also have a condition in which a person experiences a clash of opposing wishes or needs, and an incompatibility between two or more opinions, principles, or interests.
Awesome.
A lot of it's centering around some dissonance, some you know, things not being in sync. I think that comes down
I think that's a good way to boil it down. Yeah, for sure.
Boils down to that.
And there's a lot of different ideas, especially around the overall physiology when it comes to our brains.
Oh, for sure.
And how they handle conflict. Mm-hmm. But I think to put it simply, it can be boiled down to two main ideas when it comes to
two parts of the brain.
Yeah, when it comes to the physiology, right? When the two parts of the brain, we have the amygdala and we have the prefrontal cortex.
Yeah, so tell me about the amygdala.
The amygdala is a small almond-shaped section of your brain.
Almond.
And this is pretty much used as the threat detector, right? Yeah. It is the thing that's analyzing those threats, and it's either going to trigger an emotional response, whether it be anger, it can be, you know, fear, it can be either one of those.
Yeah, and it does that by releasing chemicals in your blood like adrenaline and cortisol.
Exactly.
And so then we have the prefrontal cortex right here in our noggin,
right?
Develops at 25.
Yes, and that is a good note, right? Because the prefrontal cortex is pretty much in charge of all the executive functions. Mm-hmm. It is in charge of, you know, decision making, making rational decisions,
complex thinking,
social situations, you know, putting things in context, mm-hmm. and assessing though, and also assisting in assessing those threats, right? And what you should do in those situations. Yeah. So you noted that your prefrontal cortex does not get developed until you're 25, and that makes sense why a lot of younger people are more emotional.
For sure.
They find themselves in these situations a lot more because that prefrontal cortex and that rational decision-making part of their brain hasn't fully developed yet.
Yeah, some people kind of define the difference between like a child and adult is whether they're operating based off of their emotions or off of, you know, logic and reason that they get from the prefrontal cortex. And you know, they tend to say like being an adult is 21, but I would more so say like really, you really hit adulthood at 25. And that's how I feel like from my experience too.
Same, yeah.
Like, you know, you're 21, you're just like an older kid.
You're still a teenager.
You don't really feel your age until 25, and you almost literally feel the last neurons like connect.
Develop, yeah.
Right on your 25th birthday. It's a very funny experience.
I felt that. Some people... Yeah. You know, say that they don't necessarily feel the difference. I definitely felt like this overwhelming sense of like responsibility more, like I felt more in control of like my motor functions, like
yeah, I felt like it was a bit grounding.
For sure.
To say the least. But the amygdala that we were talking about earlier, that's responsible for those fight or flight reflexes. That is often triggered during conflict, and it, you know, when that happens, it actually inhibits your prefrontal cortex from functioning, because, you know, it takes a little bit longer time for your prefrontal cortex to process information, mm-hmm. as opposed to when you react out of your emotions, whether, you know, fear or anger, within a conflict, you're much quicker to react, and it's, you know, down to our biology and where we come from, that was very important development
right
in our physiology, because if a tiger is running straight at you,
you can't be like, what do I feel?
You really
about
can't think
this
maybe
right
should
now.
I jump over the tiger, should I, you know, try to kick the tiger? You just go straight into fight or flight,
right?
But you know, as we develop and we're not surrounded by wild animals who may try to kill us,
Some of that, it becomes a little bit outdated,
yeah, and then
drives us into situations that
are not necessary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But those are those are like the D train. Showtime people. You know what I'm saying? A-Train and the J Train Showtime people don't really be. Doing shit like that.
Yeah. Do they got any
90 new
you haven't seen before?
Nah.
So the amygdala causes you to act more impulsively, and the prefrontal cortex steps in to kind of manage that response. So the amygdala ready. The amygdala like, what'd you say?
Right, right.
And the prefrefrontal cortex is like, hold on. Okay, it's like, I'm about to shoot this bitch in the head right now. And it's like, hold on, you're at work.
Right.
Prefrontal cortex, like, chill out.
And your prefrontal cortex kind of acts as like that brake to stop
to
you
slow
from,
down that
right, from going
response.
Over the ledge, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Turn your ass up.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you don't have that prefrontal cortex.
It's a little bit harder. And some people, you know, especially if you don't give your brain a chance to develop, you don't practice these types of things and actually develop, you know, different ways of thinking, then you won't ever really be able to put those brakes on in situations, and you tend to act like a child.
Yeah.
Or more so, you put yourself in situations that you necessarily didn't need to.
Right.
Especially when you're an adult, you know, there's no real reason. There's rarely a reason. I won't say there's no real reason, but there's rarely a reason to get into, like, you know, violent conflict.
That's a fact, yeah. As I get older, I realize that more and more. So there's a lot of different theories and concepts around how humans interact with conflict and how we deal with it. And I want to start diving into a couple of those concepts. We won't get into all of them.
Yeah.
But the first one I want to start off with is the different types of conflict styles. This is something that we talked about during our research.
Yeah, yeah. That was a very interesting part. And it derives from Thomas Kilman, his conflict mode instrument, or TKI.
White man?
Yes. Okay. he identified five different styles of conflict resolution, and all these different styles are kind of characterized by the level of assertiveness and cooperation. And those five styles are competing, accommodating, avoiding, collaborating, and compromising. With competing, you have a high level of assertiveness and a low level of cooperativeness. That's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, it makes sense, yeah.
You know, that type of conflict style, or, you know, that the way you handle that conflict is, you know, important in situations like sports when you're actually competing.
Right, right, right.
But also it can happen in other situations where you need to think really fastly and you don't have time to take somebody else into consideration. Then the next type of way is called accommodating, in which a lot of times it happens when you're not in a position of power, and you act on a low level of assertiveness and a high level of cooperativeness.
Okay, pretty self-explanatory as well. Yeah.
Yep. And then we have avoiding the conflict. We see that in avoidant attachment styles and things like that, where you have both a low level of assertiveness and a low level of cooperativeness. You just kind of remove yourself. You avoid it.
And a high level of you can say it.
Yeah, just
me.
Like you.
Ding, ding, ding.
then we have collaborating, which is both a high level of assertiveness and a high level of cooperativeness, in which you actively collaborate. You actively worked with the person or the thing or the situation that you're in conflict with, and you both assert yourself and your needs, and you also cooperate and take into account their needs and wants. And then the fifth one is compromising, when you have a moderate level of both assertiveness and cooperativeness, and that's when you kind of come to a middle ground. You don't completely bend over, and you don't completely assert yourself.
Is that the one we're all kind of trying to get to, or would you say that certain things call for certain situations?
Exactly. Certain situations call for certain styles in conflict resolution, or, you know, how you handle and perceive that conflict. I can't say that just from looking at it, I don't think there's one that's the best. You know, relationships, most of the time you want to either accommodate or compromise.
Right.
Or actually collaborate and, you know,
collaborate find, probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the best one. But, you know, when you're playing sports, you probably don't want to collaborate so much.
Yeah, be accommodating.
Or, yeah, or, you know, if you're competing, you have some type of, the stakes are high and you're trying to win or, you know, come out on top of a situation.
That's interesting. Yeah, I feel like that does kind of boil them all down when it comes down to
it. It kind of puts everything in its place. And I think understanding the different types is important, especially when it comes to, you know, people you care about. And then also if you're in a leadership position, how do you handle those, you know, those conflicts between you and the people that you're leading? You know, there's some times where you have to be more assertive in order to get you and your team across the finish line. But, you know, there's other times where you need to accommodate in order to, you know, give somebody some power or allow people to feel empowered.
Yeah.
So, you know, every situation kind of calls, you know, that's where discernment and that prefrontal cortex kind of comes into
handy. Yeah, right. Yeah. Awesome. Okay, so the next one we're going to talk about is something called transactional analysis, mm-hmm. right? Now, I can read the definition for this.
Yeah, I
got you.
I'm excited to hear your
thoughts. I like this one, too, because I feel like this is one of the things that I see the most relevant when it comes to conflict and just heightened interactions overall.
Why do you say that?
I'll tell you one. Okay. So, the concept of transactional analysis states that this is a psychoanalytic theory that suggests that social transactions are analyzed to determine the ego state of the communicator, to determine whether it's parent-like, childlike, or adult-like as a basis for understanding behavior. In a conflict situation, individuals may communicate in a parent-to-child or a child-to-parent manner rather than an adult-to-adult manner, which therefore exacerbates the conflict.
And that's really interesting because it kind of focuses on the ego.
Yes.
Focuses on how somebody is perceiving themselves in the conflict.
In the conflict, right.
Yeah.
And then, and I see this a lot, especially with conflicts. I mean, you know, in relationships, but just in conflicts in general. Mm-hmm. When emotions start to heighten and that amygdala starts to take over and those stress responses start to settle in, you start to see people talk to each other a little crazy, right? Start sunning them. You start talking to them almost like in a parent to child manner. Mm-hmm. Like, are you stupid? Let me explain it to you like this.
Yeah,
right?
It's like condescending.
Condescending,
you
know, right.
Talking at somebody.
Or you could do it the other. There's a lot of different, I always notice during those conflicting situations that, you know, the way that we speak to each other alters. And I think that whole concept of transactional analysis is super relevant because you break it down to, all right, at the end of the day, is it two adults having an interaction? And how are you communicating your points? Are you treating this person as an adult and giving them the level of autonomy
and respect?
And respect,
yeah.
Key point, key word in that interaction? Because if not, then you need to start with yourself first.
Hello. And now a word from our sponsors. This episode of the Evil Ego Hour podcast is brought to you by Karen, the new scripted comedy series coming to ZBS this fall.
From the creators of the hit TV series Black Tim comes the new hilarious scripted comedy, Karen. No, I'm not going to mind my own business, sir, because you're illegally parked here. You do not belong here. And by here, I do mean this country. Your Thursday nights are about to get a lot more privileged. Hi, police. It's Karen. There's a little black girl out here selling candy, and I've asked her to show me her permit several times. Should I make a citizen's arrest? Watch every week as Karen calls the police on a group of minorities doing something completely normal. No, I'm not gonna move. Is this your house that you're standing in front of? Because it looks like private property, and I've never seen you in this neighborhood before. Will Karen shed her racist ways and eventually become an ally? Excuse me, this is not a quinceanera. Please speak English.
Probably not.
All lives matter. Karen, the new comedy series coming to ZBS this fall.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part about it is we have like unique relationships with everybody. So how you are in a conflict, how me and you handle conflicts may be different than how we handle conflicts with, you know, our partners, maybe with other friends, younger siblings, older people in our lives.
That's weird. Why? So, 'cause like how I might handle a conflict with you is like very straightforward.
Yeah.
It's like I might just tell you and I feel like we get to the resolution a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like a romantic partner or, you know, maybe a business partner or mm-hmm. something like that, it's a lot more difficult. I can't.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's not a lot of ego in me and your friendship. So like, ironically, but and I think with different people, they can trigger certain feelings. Like with our romantic partners, depending on, and I won't talk too specifically on my case, but mm-hmm. with our romantic partners, we may feel like they have more power over us. And so we mm-hmm. kind of fall into this childlike, like just, you know, maybe more accommodating. Mm-hmm.
And you allow child dynamic.
Or that would be a child to parent.
Child to parent.
From you know, my perspective, if I felt like my partner had more power over me. And then I may be more accommodating. We go back to the styles and I just allow them to kind of, you know, rule over me. Or it may be a situation where I may not have as much respect for my partner and I start to speak down on them
right.
and I start to, you know, be a little bit condescending because I see myself as over them. And then right. that would come into like a parent, like, or a parent to child type of, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. conflict.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah,
or maybe it's like, you know, the younger sibling where you do like a parent to child type of transaction. Yeah, you know, some exactly. type of transaction. You may talk to your younger sibling like a parent when, you know, they're a grown adult.
Yeah, they're the same age as
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Or you have an older sibling or an uncle who likes to talk down on you, even though like you both are adults at this point in your life.
This kind of factors into the next point, which we won't go too deep into this concept, but I did want to just mention it, the overall concept of mirror neurons and empathy. We contain these cells that tend to mirror and actions. And, you know, whenever we see an action being performed, we have these neurons in our brain that kind of attached to those things.
Yeah, and you kind of put yourself in that
yeah, in that same position, which is something that is utilized whenever you're having empathy. And
yeah,
empathy is a huge determining factor when it comes to de-escalating things because you know, putting yourself in another person's perspective and right. seeing it from their point of view is one of the key elements of de-escalating situations.
But the interesting part about it is I feel like in a way it can backfire because we may assume somebody to handle a situation or a conflict in the way that we would. And we try to, we would expect them to react in a certain way. But when they don't react in that certain way, I feel like that also creates like an inner conflict and confusion, some type of
right.
dissonance in our head.
So maybe you're somebody who's competitive and that's how you typically handle conflicts amongst you and your family or amongst you and your friend group. But if you try to do that with somebody you don't know as well and their response is way different from what you expected, then, mm-hmm. you know, it might result in the escalation of a conflict or something like that.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah, I get with that. I get that.
But I do agree overall that, you know,
empathy is key.
Yeah. And then, I mean, in my situation, it was, you know, with the dude like jacking up his girl, like, you know, that was a bit triggering for me seeing somebody be helpless and not have anybody step up. And so in that instance, it was like, oh, well, I should probably step up. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, my empathy was kind of pulled out because I felt like she was helpless.
Yeah. You saw yourself as her in that moment, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. There's conflict resolution and how we get to that. But I also think that there's a deeper part of that, you know,
to conflict resolution. There's something beyond actually.
I think there's something beyond conflict. Exactly. Because, you know, depending on the situation, it may spiral out of control or it may spiral into control, depending on how one reacts to a situation.
Isn't that one of the, like, the conflict spiral theory or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it actually is.
So interactions like that are often cyclical. It often
But they can spiral out of control, which most of us have definitely witnessed. Or they can kind of de-escalate in the same accelerating fashion to where things slow, like fastly get resolved. And that's the ideal situation. Oddly enough, like with my most recent partner, that was something that we really got down very well, is that how to spiral conversations into control. And it was the first time I ever really experienced a situation where when I was in a conflict with somebody, it always resolved quickly.
What is the key elements of having something spiral into control? The first thing I thought was like having things, taking away the stakes, making it a little bit lighter so that you're able to, so that you're not triggering that amygdala, and that you're able to like approach situations from a calm standpoint and not have these heightened emotions. So maybe approaching things with humor. But what are some ways to have things spiral into control? That's interesting.
I think one thing that we were really good at was open dialogue about, you know, what we were feeling. Being able to say like, this is making me feel this way, instead of saying you're doing this to
ooh,
me.
Ooh,
it was nice. It actually, oddly enough, solving the problem was easier talking about what we were experiencing in our own heads, because then you can see where the divide is between the two.
Like, yeah, you can see.
Okay,
where
you're
you
experiencing
lie in
this,
that. Yeah.
But that's not even what I was trying to
right,
do.
Here, right,
you
know right, right. Mean? And that's very good that you're not labeling them as this. You are doing this to me. It's important that they know how they're making you feel, but that is a very good distinction of saying, this is how I feel right now. I'm not necessarily trying to make you feel blamed for it. And of course, this has to occur with somebody that you trust, because somebody could easily just take advantage of your vulnerability in that moment.
Oh yeah, of course.
And that happens sometimes in emotional relationships or you know, relationships overall. You express that vulnerability and they're like, you a bitch and you wrong. Like,
right, for sure, you know? for sure. But yeah, I mean, it does require that bit of trust and cooperation. And yeah, like I said, shifting the attention towards what you're experiencing from them. And, you know, you can still hold them accountable, because people need to be accountable for their actions, whether they meant that or not.
Sure.
There's, you know, a lot of people say, well, I didn't mean to do that. That's not even what I was trying to do. And they think that absolves them from any accountability from how you made somebody feel, which, and, you know, there's a definitely a line in between that, because you can't always be responsible for somebody's reaction to, you know,
very
what
true.
You say or what you feel. But if you care about them and there's space for you to understand and compromise with them, it's important to acknowledge that and to take that into consideration.
Hello. This episode of the Evil Ego Hour podcast is brought to you by Phony.
Recent studies show that 9 out of 10 Americans are paying way too much for their cell phone service. Companies like AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile charge their customers high rates simply because there's no other options. And why should you pay for service anyway? Isn't connection a basic human right? Shouldn't the ability to communicate with your friends and family be completely free? We sure think so. Introducing Phony. Phony is the only cell phone carrier that provides unlimited talk and text for absolutely free. That's right, absolutely free. At Phony, we use state-of-the-art technology to simply borrow service from other cell phone towers in the nearby area. And the best part is, you don't have to pay, because we're just borrowing it. We give the service back as soon as the call is complete or the message has been sent. Simple as that.
Sign up for Phony today, and if you're not satisfied with the service after the first 30 days, there's a 100% money-back guarantee. Phony is the future. The future is Phony.
I think you don't understand this because of this. It's like, well, I'll let them explain what they believe is the disconnect. Because whenever you start telling somebody about themselves, this is what you're doing to me, then it almost feels like, you know, well, you don't even know me. You're taking away my autonomy, you know, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But very, very great points. You know what I mean? Yeah. And staying calm and present seems like the first, you know, piece to all of this. But you kind of touched on this overall idea of something going beyond just conflict resolution. And I think you're referring to the overall concept of conflict transformation.
Yeah. Right? And
something
like
on a deeper level.
Yeah. So I'll define conflict transformation.
Okay.
So conflict transformation is a process of addressing a conflict in a way that seeks to change the underlying cause of the conflict. Conflict resolution typically is a one-off event and you just solve the problem and go from there. With conflict transformation, you're actually trying to get the root cause of it and prevent it from happening again. And so
is this on a societal?
It can be, but it can also be for one-on-one relationships. You know, a lot we're talking about romantic relationships a lot, and I think conflict transformation is really important in developing it doesn't even have to be romantic, honestly, but developing any relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you have to establish trust, like we were talking about earlier. You have to establish a clear line of communication with the person, understanding how people communicate and how you communicate and how that can be better. And putting things in place, whether it's on an institutional level or whether it's just, you know, boundaries between you and somebody, those things are a part of conflict transformation because you're transforming this conflict into grounds of trust. You're transforming this conflict into a way for you to actually be closer to somebody.
And you're creating a deeper level of understanding
exactly.
in the process.
For sure. And there's a lot of different ways you can kind of go about conflict transformation. We kind of touched on one, talking one-on-one with somebody and having, you know, a great dialogue with them.
Right. Then another one, I think, I think you were about to get into was the concept of narrative mediation.
Yeah.
And focusing on the stories that you're telling yourself about the person that you're having an interaction with.
Mm-hmm.
I get caught up in this a lot, especially when it comes to, you know, my partner. Even though we're literally bonded, and whenever we get into these heightened conflicts in these situations, for some reason, I start telling myself a different story, this narrative that I'm feeding myself that they don't care. They did this on purpose. They wanted to make me upset. They have to know what they're doing. And this is really difficult when you start to develop a long-standing relationship with somebody because you have the background thought that they should know. They should already know that I don't like that.
Yeah,
right?
And they should know you by now.
Right, and it's not really fair. I mean, in some instances, you know, if you have some established boundaries that are being crossed, that's one thing. But a lot of times we make the false assumption that somebody should know exactly what we think in every moment.
Yeah, because you spend so much time with them that it's like it's hard to even, you know, sometimes it's hard to even see the separation between you and that person.
Right.
And when you don't see the separation between you and that person, the moment that they break that connection can be very disturbing and it can, you know, it can cause you to really get heightened up,
yeah,
you know,
it
trigger you exactly. Yeah. But there, you know, sometimes it's hard to work things out one-on-one with a person just through dialogue or, you know, through using your prefrontal cortex to think through it.
Right.
And then in those types of cases, it's very helpful to have a third party come in, somebody who is neutral, who doesn't really have stakes in either one of you winning this, you know, conflict.
Right.
And allowing them to provide their outside perspective.
Yeah, he did winning with air quotes for the listeners, by the way.
Yeah, it was.
And that's, you're not winning. You want to come to some sort of collaboration.
The only win in a conflict is when both sides are happy with the outcome, or you know, you made a compromise that both of you can live with.
Bars.
That's the only way to really win. If somebody else is not feeling, you know, you may not always feel good after a conflict, but there should definitely be a ground of understanding.
Right. And we have the power to be able to navigate this too. Like we have,
especially as adults.
Yes,
and young adults. I mean, like we're, you know.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you now you're aware, so you can't just keep getting away with, oh my, it was my amygdala. And like now that you have the knowledge, you know now. So it's like try to make these steps of cultivating a small level of detachment with you and your emotions, creating that space for that prefrontal cortex to step in and be like, all right, let's actually assess this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that brings us to our last final point, and that is the overall concept of peace building we're talking about.
Yeah, that means
that for me.
That it's a little bit in the vein of having like a third party mediator.
Oh, okay.
Because a third party mediator is kind of giving you the outside perspective, so you two can solve the issue with that added perspective. But then there's something called arbitration. I was trying to figure out how to pronounce this word before.
Right.
Arbitration.
My boy.
And it's kind of the same thing, but that third party is establishing what that resolution is for the two parties. that happens a lot in therapy. But then if we go to like a bigger perspective, we think about like peace treaties that happen in the world and, you know, with our governments. It's the same thing. You know, you come in between, you know, two countries who are at long time disputes, or, you know, if there's a war situation, you try to come together to create a peace treaty to have a compromise that both sides can live with and hold up and honor.
Gotcha.
The interesting part is that is a very sensitive point in the conflict resolution, because when people don't honor that agreement,
yeah,
it can almost exacerbate the conflict and make it a lot worse.
Yeah.
So that's a very vulnerable time. But at the same way, in the same vein, that same power can be transformative and can create a lot of peace.
Yeah, create a lot. It can create a completely new understanding. And a lot of times, you know, our interactions and our relationships are dictated by how we handle conflict. Mm-hmm. And you, just as a person, you are going to be judged on how you handle conflict throughout life. So this is something that you want to start keeping in mind, and keeping in mind the physiology, knowing that, you know, there are certain parts in your brain that are triggering you to do certain things, but just the overall awareness of that can help you, as we prior stated, start to cultivate a level of detachment and start to really take control of these different aspects.
Yeah, and the easiest way to kind of calm down the amygdala and get back to your prefrontal cortex is literally just breathing. I mean, this is something that my mom's taught me when I was mad young, and I didn't even realize how transformative, that hot word. I didn't realize how transformative that was. Like, she used to tell me, because like, I used to have really bad, like, anger issues, and I would, like just
hyperventilate. I'm going to beat up an old man right now, duh. I'm going to beat up an old nigga.
But it literally takes 90 seconds to reset your brain. I mean, we don't always have that leisure or that luxury to have 90 seconds to just breathe and calm ourselves down. But even 20 seconds can be really transformative in calming us down and getting our nerves underway so we can think correctly. So literally just taking 10 to 20 deep breaths all the way in into your stomach and then out can calm you down, so you can actually think about the issue at mind and respond in a way that is not driven by emotion, but is driven by reason, logic, and care for yourself and the outside world.
Just breathe. Just breathe.
Just breathe. Ain't a
bitch how everything just come down to breathing, always.
Always.
That's crazy, bruh.
I think that's the name of the episode, Just Breathe.
But you feel good?
I'm feeling good about this.
You're not conflicted at all?
No, I'm tired.
You're tired?
That's tired.
Okay, bro. We did it.
I definitely handled the conflict of this terrible schedule. I'm going
to
go sleep.
You already know your boy wants to go to sleep, so we're going to get up out of here. As you know, it's the Green Tea Goat. It's the Peach Tea Poppy. Mr. At Night Can't Rap. You know, Night Can't Talk. All social media. We got Big Dog Wolf on the ones and twos in the background.
Yes, sir. This is Xavier Cody. Xavier Cody on the TikToks and at Cody Manawi on everywhere else. You can call me Xavier. You should call me Cody. And that's all I got.
Open your damn eyes. Like I said, we got 2 more seconds before we get out of here. As you know, this is the EVU Hour podcast program.
The what? Show,
whatever the EVU Hour program or whatever you want to call it, on all streaming platforms. Make sure you leave a review. Make sure you leave a comment. Keep that engagement going.
Yes, sir.
Be going strong.
Do you have a little Evil Ego Hour.
Hour. And what is the thing that we say at the end of every episode?
This is not professional medical or therapeutic advice. This is for your entertainment only. Please consult your therapist wherever problems you're having.
Yeah. We still
and we're just your friends.
Yeah, we just talking shit, man. We just your boys. You feel me?
Your boys.
Back at it next week. You already know what it is. Thank you for another. I always say you already know what it is.
I know. I noticed that.
Oh my god.
You said it like 7 times.
Sick of myself. All right, y'all. We out of here.
We're gonna have a conflict on that one.
Peace.